Hello and welcome to the Doc Talk podcast. I'm Kenny Walter, Assistant Managing Editor of ACP Live. In recent months, there's been more and more buzz about daprodustat as a treatment for patients with anemia of chronic kidney disease. The treatment currently has a February 1st PDUFA date for FDA approval. A recent study shows adults with CKD treated with daprodustat had increased hemoglobin as well as significantly improved vitality scores for fatigue. The treatment was also well tolerated and safe. During the American Society of Nephrology's Kidney Week meeting, I sat down with Dr. Kirsten Johansson of the University of Minnesota to talk about the positive data for the drug and how important it is for drug developers to consider quality of life when creating new drugs. Without further ado, here is my conversation with Dr. Johansson.
So basically, to start things off, can you give a brief overview of what you presented here at ASN 2022?
One important thing that we presented here was additional results from the ASCEND-NHQ study. So that's the study of patients not on dialysis, and that study was different from the large CVOTs because it was a placebo-controlled trial. And one of the key goals was to try to look at quality of life. And we did that, and that was presented in another manuscript, but in this presentation, we presented extended results, including results of a questionnaire that that GSK developed according to FDA guidelines, and I was involved in some in that development as well, specifically to try to capture patients' experiences, patients' symptoms of anemia of chronic kidney disease. So it started all the way from focus groups with patients asking them what their symptoms were of anemia, and then we took those results and we put those responses into different categories and came up with an instrument. And then we went back to the patients and said, does this instrument capture what you think your symptoms are? And eventually whittled that down to an instrument with three domains. One of them is fatigue, shortness of breath. Fatigue and weakness. And one of them is shortness of breath and chest pain. And another is cognitive dysfunction. And then it has a couple of standalone items too. So both groups got that questionnaire as well as the other ones that we had previously presented. And what we found was big improvement in fatigue in the patients that received daprodustat compared to placebo, that were really matching what we had seen using the vitality score of the SF-36 that had been shown before, but also improvements in the shortness of breath and chest pain. And somewhat to my surprise, even the cognitive function domain improved in a statistically significant way. So I was really excited to present that here. It has gotten lost a lot because it's difficult. It's difficult to quantify. It's much more nebulous, and when we can have a number, when we can have a blood pressure or a hemoglobin or something like that, people can wrap their minds around that. And it's a lot harder sometimes with quality of life. For example, when we looked at the vitality score of the SF-36, that's asking patients, how often do you feel worn out or tired? And it's got several other questions. And then you come up with a score, and we found a difference of 5.4, 5.6, somewhere in there, points between the group, the daprodustat group, and the group that got the ESAs. And that was statistically significant. And we thought clinically meaningful as well, but we got a lot of questions. Well, what does that mean to patients? People just don't know. How do I interpret this 1 to 100 score of vitality? So it's just very hard. And the other problem, I think, with quality of life data, and why I do think that a 5-point-something% difference is meaningful, is anemia is not the only thing going on. They have kidney disease. They're having all sorts of other things. They may have fluid overload. They may have differences in their blood pressure. They may even be hospitalized. So we're addressing a very important part of their care, but not the whole thing. So seeing a quality of life difference by addressing this important part, I think, is really important. So I think nephrology, unfortunately, because of our penchant for numbers, we're very quantitative folks, had ignored the patient experience for a while. But I really want to give people credit. I think that that is changing. I'm really starting to see a sea change towards paying more attention to how patients feel all the way around. So I think that's a welcome development.
Okay. Is it challenging to kind of measure fatigue? Because I guess similar to pain, it's partially on the individual. Everyone has kind of a different threshold. And, you know, when you're dealing with adult patients, it's maybe tough for the non-doctor to basically figure out if they're medically fatigued or if they're just tired because they're an adult and every adult is tired to some extent all the time.
It's not just hard for the non-doctor, it's hard for the doctor. So, I think you are absolutely right. In fact, it's yes, individual patients undoubtedly answer the patients differently. The good news is that we do measure the change in that person. And so perhaps their scale or their threshold is a little different from someone else, but we're still seeing if we change that person. So I think that helps to address that a little. But it contributes to that whole thing I was talking about before, what does that mean to a patient, I think. So it is quite difficult. And the other thing, this is probably more detailed than you want, but the other thing I've been told by these by questionnaire developers who are expert in this is that patients actually respond differently when you ask them, do you feel tired or worn out? It's not exactly the flip side of if you ask them, do you have a lot of energy? So it's actually good to put those both in the scale and kind of average those things out. I would have thought that would just be a mirror image and, you know, whatever score you got on the one, it would just be the opposite. But it doesn't always work out that way.
Interesting. We are also in a time where the baby boomers are becoming senior citizens. There's a large segment of the population that's 70-plus, and that's going to grow in the next 10 years. How important is it to conduct studies like this with that in mind, that we know we might have a issue where more people are going to have kidney disease just because there's going to be more people in that age bracket?
Absolutely.
So how important is a study like that with that
okay,
in mind?
Sorry, yeah. I was like, what was the question? No, it's very important. We need to learn how to take care of people with kidney disease because, just as you said, we're going to have more and more people. We already have had more and more people with kidney disease every year as the population is aging. Unfortunately, 2020 may be the exception to that because of the COVID pandemic, but we expect we'll get back to some sort of trajectory where that's going to be the case. So we need to learn how to take care of patients, and it raises an issue that people haven't talked very much about. That might go beyond what you need to know, but I'm very curious what you were saying before. Does an older person think about their quality of life and their fatigue in the same way as a younger person as well? So I think we may need to really start gathering more data on the nuances too, to make sure we're doing a good job with all patients.
Well, when you're talking about clinical fatigue, does lifestyle, and I don't necessarily mean like drugs, alcohol, and poor food choices, but just have a strenuous job, does that exacerbate clinical fatigue, or is clinical fatigue something that kind of goes beyond what you're doing on a daily basis to make you tired?
The short answer is I don't know. The longer answer is probably yes. I mean, fatigue, depression, anxiety, these things are all interrelated. And they're usually associated with each other, and they contribute. So teasing them out is always really hard. When you say lifestyle, because of my background and things like that, one place that I go, though, is physical activity. And we do have evidence, at least cross-sectionally, that physical activity is associated with less fatigue. So people who are more active tend to have less fatigue. Patients with kidney disease tend to be very inactive. We don't know yet. We need to look at whether if we could get them a little bit more active, would we be able to improve their fatigue that way as well? And that might really go well with treating their anemia. We treat their anemia and we get them more active, we might even get even more improvement.
Okay. Okay. I'm glad you mentioned depression and anxiety, because I guess since COVID, that's been a push in other specialties. But in nephrology, you guys have always had a synergy with cardiovascular disease and with diabetes endocrinology. So you've worked with the specialists, at least those two specialists, in the past. Is there now a push to add psychiatry to the mix of a multidisciplinary approach to patient care?
I would love to see that. Unfortunately, I'm not sure that the structure of the American healthcare system is going to facilitate that very easily. But in the research arena, I'm working with a psychologist on some interventions and things to address depression, anxiety, and we're thinking of addressing activity. So I would love to see it, but it's sort of difficult to do. We are in my clinic trying to incorporate palliative care physicians actually in as well, which is a little bit different. Yeah. But anyway.
All right. What are the kind of the gaps that you want to see closed in terms of quality of life research? I know you're looking at fatigue and anemia and things like that. Where would you like to see kind of research going forward that maybe we're not doing right now?
Well, in the anemia zone, I'd like to see us tease out a little bit more low hemoglobin from iron deficiency, because iron deficiency alone, even without a low hemoglobin, may cause fatigue and some of these quality of life issues. And so, you know, the studies that we've done have focused appropriately on deprotostat specifically, but that interplay with iron and iron parameters might be really important, especially if the drug proves to improve oral iron absorption, as there's hope that it might. So I'd like to see us do that. And as I kind of got at before, I'd also like to see us just do a better job treating the anemia and then see if that facilitates patients becoming more active and more just more participatory in the activities that they want to do and how that affects them.
Right. And I know this isn't the only study you're an author on here at Kidney Week 2022. Is there anything else you want to add about what else you're doing here?
Sure. Well, there are a number of abstracts at this meeting about deprotostat, as I'm sure you've seen. A couple of the ones that I've been involved in, one is looking at the stability of hemoglobin and deprotostat compared with the comparators. And that was really interesting. We didn't really find very much difference in the dialysis population. But in the non-dialysis population, we saw that the patients treated with deprotostat spent a little bit more time within the target hemoglobin range than the patients on the ESA arm. And in a different study, we saw that big changes, fluctuations in hemoglobin were associated with cardiovascular events. So big increases were associated with more bad outcomes, but also big decreases. And so those two kind of go together, because if we're having more stability and more in the range, then we were also having less of those fluctuations. And so it's promising. I think it suggests that the study design got the drug titration algorithm right, and that if one follows that algorithm, you get pretty good stability of hemoglobin.
All right. Well, great. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you to Dr. Johansson for taking time out of her busy schedule to talk to me. And thank you for listening. As always, please follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn. And check back this week for coverage of the FDA's decision on daprodustat. Thanks again. I'm Kenny Walter. Thank you.